This is the PR Podcast, a show about how public relations helps you tell your story to the world. We talk with great PR practitioners who have the skills, creativity, and just plain savvy to get their clients noticed. Now here's your host, Jody Fisher.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the PR Podcast. I'm Jody Fisher. Thanks for joining us. Well, do not forget to send us your PR Podcast plug. This is the easiest way to promote yourself. And I joke, I say that as publicists, at least for myself, really great at promoting my clients, horrible at promoting myself. So we want you to be able to promote yourself by sending us something that you do that you're really proud of. Did you write a book? I know my friend and our former guest, Michelle Glogovac, just wrote a book called How to Get on Podcasts. She is the podcast matchmaker. She's terrific. So we're giving her a shout out here. Michelle, congratulations on that book. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about when the PR Podcast plug is send us something cool that you've done that we can give you a little shout out and a little bit of love for. Send it to us on any of the socials, either on the PR Podcast or at my handles, at Jody Fisher. Or you can just send me an email, jody@jodyfisherpr.com. Send us your podcast plug, and we'll give you a little bit of love at the top of an upcoming episode. Now, on with our show for today, we have a terrific guest. Sherry Goldman is founder of Goldman Communications Group, an award-winning public relations marketing communications agency offering strategic counsel, messaging, media relations, corporate issues communications, thought leadership programming, community relations, and crisis communications to a wide range of corporate and nonprofit clients. Now, prior to her founding Goldman, she held senior management positions at international PR firms like Ruder Finn and Roland Worldwide. She's also worked in editorial positions in print and broadcast media, a background very much like my own. So we have a lot in common here. She's also the host, speaking of common, of the radio show Let's Talk PR and More, which airs weekly on WRHU-FM in the New York City area and is available as a podcast as well. She's also an adjunct professor. Sherry, welcome to the PR Podcast.
Thanks, Jody. So great to be here.
Talk about two peas in a pod, right? We are like shadows of each other. We have the same background, the same upbringing, you know, everything. How does having the background that you had inform what you do today?
I think it's everything. It's the foundation. Certainly as a PR person, one of the things we do is earned media, getting our clients that editorial coverage. So coming from the media, understanding how the media works, understanding from their perspective what makes a good story, how to package a story and put it together is helpful to me as a PR pro. It may not make me popular with all my clients when they go, we want the media to cover this, then I have to go, well, I don't know that it's a great broadcast story because we don't have three locations. We only have one talking head, or what's our visual? Or I don't know it's such a good story because they've covered it yesterday and they're not going to cover it again today. So let's think broader angle. Let's think trends. Can we put you in a trend or an issue instead of just a story about you company, you know, XYZ? So it's probably made me a little... And I should say, it's also made me probably a little soft when pitching the media and dealing with them. If they don't want it, I get it. I'll sometimes say, help me understand what would work for you. Help me understand what you're working on. But I'm not the barracuda that's pushing it. And yet I know a lot of PR people don't take no for an answer. They just push, 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 push. Listen, Jody,
well, and sometimes
about
you gotta
relationship.
Push, right?
You don't have to push within reason. But
yeah,
you have to
yeah,
understand
exactly.
That you're not going to do it and then say, what's my plan B? And plan B is it another reporter? Is it another angle? Plan B is in another media. Maybe it's not going to be the Wall Street Journal. What else could it be that makes sense? Maybe it could be the Philadelphia Inquirer business pages. There are some other options because media relations is like a game of checkers.
Yeah. And you and I both, like you said, have that sort of that newsroom mentality, right? Of putting ourselves in the shoes of what we used to do inside a newsroom where those decisions get made. And you and I both know those decisions get made literally in the blink of an eye in terms of, do we want to cover this story? Do we not want to cover this story? Does it make sense or does it not make sense? It's really a gut reaction before it's anything else, right?
But it just means as a PR person, even if we're sending a pitch letter, we have to give them everything instantaneously now. So, you know, yes, you have relationships with reporters and media, but, you know, they're downsizing, they're changing beats. You never know. They've got to sell it internally, too. So not every reporter has carte blanche to write what they want. They still have got to go to their editor, their managing editor, their producer, and say, here's the story I want to do. And if they're hemming and hawing and can't answer all the questions, it's not getting done because the newsrooms are too stretched too thin right now. So that means as PR people, we have to give them everything in the pitch and think about everything. So give them just the facts, not the fluff, not the funnies, but give them the facts of the story, not only the facts about your client, but the facts of why this story is important, relevant, not because to you, but to their audience.
That
so
is it.
If you think about it, you know, it takes longer. It may hone your pitch down a little, but chances are it'll be more successful.
Do you have an ideal length of pitch that you like to send? I mean, there's a million opinions about
Can
this,
I
right?
Tell What's you, your sweet spot? Well, I don't know. It's all email. I just did an interview recently with Linda Zabarian of Muckrack because they do their report every year on state of journalism. And I just did an interview with her for my radio show. And she said that journalists now say a pitch should be under 200 words. And I'm horrified because I said to her, that's not enough. There's not enough for me. You know, it shouldn't be five pages. It should be a few paragraphs. But, you know, and I also teach PR writing and it's like, set the story. Then who are you offering as the interview? And 200 words is nothing. So I'm a big believer. I personally still think it has to be a little bit longer than that. But apparently brevity is key. And this, since most pitches are now email, that subject line is everything.
Yeah.
That subject line means they're going to open it and they're going to read the first sentence or two. So catch them. Don't go, I think I have a story that you might be interested in, because they're going to go, delete.
Yeah, right. Big surprise. That's what everybody's writing to me about. They have a story they think I'm going to be interested, right? Now, at the same time, I do take that just one moment, that one line at the top, if it's applicable, to say, I have a story for this column that you write, or I have a thing for this feature that you do on your nightly TV newscast, right? Put it sort of, put them in the frame of mind of I'm thinking about what you're doing.
Right, because that already says, I know what you're doing. So I saw this for the story you did yesterday, here's a follow-up, or here's something that might make sense. And then they'll read the second sentence. But if you start long-winded, and they don't have the time anymore to go through it. I mean, literally, I was pitching, I guess about a year ago, I think it was the Rochester Democrat, I'm messing up the name, but the daily newspaper in Rochester. They have one local reporter. He covers everything. The paper was owned by Gannett. So we're talking the major daily newspaper. And I'm like, Steve, I need you to come and do this. And he's like, you know, one minute he's out covering a crime. And the next minute I was pitching a business story of a program that was happening in Rochester. He's covering everything. He goes, even if I want to do it, I don't have the time. So they don't have the time to read, think about. It's a shame because I don't think it's helping us that the media is shrinking, but I think we have to be mindful that it is and how we deal with that.
Yeah. And you and I probably both shed a tear when we hear about those shrinking newsrooms.
God.
And just today I'm reading a story about something going on at the LA Times.
I was just going to say, did you read about the LA Times and they're doing a one day workout, but they're
Yeah. And so that's bad. That's bad. And I think you agree. Not just bad for us as PR people, fewer reporters to pitch stories to, but also bad for everybody because it's less information. It's fewer outlets. It's less information. It's probably more aggregation and more pulling from larger, and I'm going to use the word more impersonal sources. And there's nothing like local news that affects local communities.
Well, and on top of that, absolutely. I agree with you 1,000%. But it also means that the news is now coming, and people getting their news on social media, or that's where their information, they're getting it from companies. And I'm not saying companies are bad, although people don't trust companies that well, but it's framed that's good for the company. So it's lacking often the perspective. And what you get certainly from local news is those people looking into issues. Those people that they may get a press release and they're not running it, but they say, oh, this is a topic that's interesting to me. What should I do? So, I mean, for many years, I work with credit unions, and it's not that the credit union offers banking or auto loans, but it's like they go, maybe we should do a story on what the difference between a credit union and a bank is from the people, from the consumer perspective, from the business perspective. It's a great story. My column made my clients participate in it. It's a fabulous story. Credit unions have a good story to tell, but that comes from a local journalist. That's not going to come from
from a big corporate overlord, right?
Yeah. Well, because if a company sends it out, they're going to, of course, a credit union's going to send out a story that says credit unions are better than banks, and banks are going to send it out. So that third party endorsement, that validity, that credibility that comes from a reporter verifying it, checking it, putting it together as a story. And certainly we've seen investigative journalism on everything from police and crime or greed and fraud in local governments, you know, that comes, and certainly from in trade media, because I started in trade media. Well, I didn't start, I started in television and then trade media, you know, covering the industry, putting together trends in an industry instead of this client did this, this company did this. If three companies are doing that, what's the trend? How are they aggregating it and pulling it together? So all of those things are important, I think.
Absolutely.
But I know I'm preaching to the choir, Jody, so I love that.
Right, but you know, the people who listen to the show are interested in this too. Not only whether they're fellow PR professionals who want to hear about this, but also people who are interested in potentially using PR. They want to understand better, and that's what we seek to do, is to educate, we say, on how the news get made, what goes into creating that newspaper or that nightly TV newscast or that radio, you know, all news radio station. You said a little while ago, helping clients position stories to make them media worthy, right? And sometimes it doesn't belong in this publication, but maybe it belongs in that publication. And I'm a big believer in the thought that every story belongs somewhere. You just got to figure out where it belongs. How do you approach that topic?
You really have to, from a business standpoint, you have to sit down with the client and say, who's your target audience and who are you trying to reach? Okay. And there's no audience of everybody. So you've got to break it into manageable, identifiable groups. Even if it's consumers, you're not finding mommies at the same place you're finding teenagers. You're not finding suburban women in the same place you're finding 40-year-old men. And I say finding them, it's geographically, but it's the media that they reach. It's the columns that they follow. So once you understand your audience, then you have to match that audience with the media, and it's the audience of that media. So for example, I'll go back to one of the credit union clients, and we did really hyper-local publicity for them, amongst other things. You know, and they're a scholarship program, and they're like, well, everybody can open it in, you know, in New York, you know, is eligible. But from a media standpoint, they're like, well, if they're not doing business in my town, I don't care. Or better yet, we're doing a fair and it's in the Bronx, but everybody's eligible to join. And you want to have the Brooklyn Courier write about it. They're like, it's not in Brooklyn. We know people from Brooklyn can get on the subway to go to the Bronx. We get that. If you want to say it, buy an ad. That's what advertising is for. You want editorial coverage? If it's not running in Brooklyn in my town, we're not writing about it. So it's an education process for clients, but it's also understanding what makes sense. So you've got to match the audience that the client wants with the audience that the media covers. And that's where you start. And then it's got to be timely. It's got to have prominence. It's got to be significant, newsworthy, you know, all kinds of things of what makes news.
Yeah, and you and I both agree, and I've explained it this way too, that reporters basically make that decision based on two general criteria: geography and subject matter, right? And what you just explained is either is a story relevant to our geography, the audience that we serve, or is it relevant to the subject matter that we talk about, right?
Well, and it's both. I'll give you another example. I do a lot of work with green tech and green tech startups, and they wanted to be ingrained to New York business. They were not based here. They were actually one that was what the client that was doing a pilot program in Rochester, and they wanted to be ingrained to New York business. Why? Because that's where the investment community was, and they're looking for angel money. So they certainly wanted a story, I get it, in front of where the investment community would read about it. From Crane's New York business perspective, they're not based in New York City. They don't have employees from New York City. And right now, the pilot program is not happening in the five boroughs. I love the reporter. He's like, call me back when you're here. I'm like, I get it. I have to pitch it because my client asked me, even though I knew that one probably wasn't going to fly, but you try. But it's not about not taking no, it's understanding and then saying, okay, so then if I get this, if I'm able to open an office in New York, if I'm able to get a second pilot program in the five boroughs, would you be interested? And they say yes. And then you can go back to the clients and say, okay, here's why it doesn't work. But when you continue to grow and evolve and do this, we have an opportunity to go back.
And that's an opportunity to brainstorm with the client too, and get and push them in that direction. Because I think there are some clients, and I'm sure you've had them over the years, who expect you to be able to facilitate the story they want. And really, what our job is sort of building the bridge between what the client wants and what the media will report, and finding that happy space in the middle.
Listen, absolutely. I tell this story every time when I pitch a new business. I had gotten an opportunity to pitch a client that was an industrial client, and they were coming out with a line of safety products, hard hat, helmet thing. But they were technically a public company, so they were sold on the pink sheet, and they wanted to be in the Wall Street Journal. And I said to them, well, number one, I'm not getting you in the Wall Street Journal. It's not something that the Wall Street Journal is going to write about. I said, but even if I did, and I pulled rabbits out of hats, one article in the Wall Street Journal for one time is not going to get, they were selling to municipalities and fire departments. I said, that's not going to get you sales. It's not putting you in front of the audience. I mean, like I said, you need what I call that down and dirty trade program. And you need to be in Fire Chief Magazine and Better Roads and Government and Coal Age. And they were like, no. I said, okay. I wish you luck. And 4 months later, they called me and they said, you know what? We thought about what you said. You're right. Let's do it. And we got them a great amount of editorial coverage where potential sales leads can come from. It may not have been as sexy or as glamorous to them as saying, we want to be in the Wall Street Journal. Well, everybody, I'm sure you had it. I mean, I know my business is a little older than yours, but everybody used to call and go, I want to be on Oprah. Or I want to be on the Daily Show. I'm like, good luck to
Oh, if
you.
I had a
Can
nickel,
you get
right?
us an
If
Oprah?
I had
I'm
a nickel.
like, no. Not even gonna waste my time. No. It's
Yeah,
not,
exactly. Exactly. Now, maybe someday you get there, to that point.
Absolutely. And
Maybe
maybe
someday
someday
you
you
get
get
there,
there.
but.
And a lot of it, in those high-level things, depending upon the guest, some of it. If you look at Good Morning America now or the Today Show and all those products, they're product integrations. They're paid. They are
Let's
paid
talk a little bit
opportunities.
about that, about how, oh, I'm gonna, I don't even want to put it this way, but let's talk about the overlap, or maybe it used to be that editorial and paid were two very different sides of the office, right? And neither ever ventured over the line, at least that much. We see an awful lot of mixing now, with certain publications, mixing paid content and masquerading it as editorial content.
Yeah, there's two things. So there's that. There's paid content. They call it native advertising. They call it sponsored content. They call it on broadcast product integration, where they'll talk about your great thing. But not only do you pay, but you give them a percentage of revenues of what's been sold. And then there's other things, like some trade publications or local publications are strictly in some ways pay for play. And they go, you want us to come out and cover your local event? You need to buy an advertising schedule. And I'm like, no, thank you. It depends. Does it make sense? Listen, once you're doing that, the budgets skew tremendously, because then it's how much money do you have, right? And then PR has always been more affordable, you know, more bang for your buck kind of thing. The budgets on that become very different. But also, when people know it's paid for, there's a bit of cynicism or skepticism, I should say. And I think rightfully so. So suddenly the credibility of getting an article in a paper like Forbes, used to be fabulous to be in Forbes, but now half of Forbes is paid for. So now, you know, I don't think so highly of somebody that I read about in Forbes because I know it's paid for content. It could be interesting to me to read, but am I making decisions on that based upon? No, not the same way. The same way influencers promote things now, but I know they're getting paid for it. So, and rightfully, I should know because people are making purchasing decisions based upon what influencers are saying. But if I know they're getting paid for it, then I really have to do my own homework because maybe they don't believe it. Maybe they just believe in the dollar.
And that's the hard part, too, is that, you know, there are some publications that put that little sponsored content or advertorial content or that little banner, that little, you know, disclaimer in the bottom right hand corner or whatever it is. But some don't.
Well, they're supposed to. According to the FTC, they're all supposed to. But yeah. You're right. And how savvy are consumers? You and I are in the communications
exactly.
business. We know. I teach my students that. I'm not sure everybody knows that.
So when you have that conversation with the students that you do teach, what do you talk about in that regard? And what is their opinion? I want to know what the younger generation coming up is thinking about all this. Do they value earned media anymore, or is it all social and influencers?
They don't read earned media. I have to teach them. I mean, I'm the dinosaur who gets newspapers delivered to the front door. And the first thing I do on the first day of my school is I do this creature of culture and current events. And I ask, who's this? And when's this happening? And then I go, how do you get your news? And almost nobody watches TV news anymore. Nobody, half of them don't have TVs because they're cord cutters. Nobody reads a newspaper. So where do you get your news? Whatever Apple pushes me. I had one student say, whatever TikTok, whatever YouTube sends me is the next video. And I said, so you let a brand that has an algorithm decide that you're a student in Manhattan? So I have to teach them, okay, how many people use Twitter? How many people use TikTok? How to find reputable sources on those things? I said, at least follow them. So when they put something there, you might see it in your feed and it'll click your brain to go, I need to find out more. But if they're not seeing it in those feeds for Twitter or Instagram and now TikTok, then they're not aware of it, which to me is so very, very sad. But
yeah,
it is,
sad.
I think our media is credible.
Too.
It's got great credibility, but it's not reaching as wide an audience as it used to.
Yeah, sad and a little bit dangerous too, I think, because an uninformed populace is a dangerous populace.
Right, and the downside to the other thing is certainly with the advent of cable television and social, when you do get your information, you're getting it in your echo bubbles. You're getting it from the people who already validate your opinions and what you believe. So it becomes more important or more real or more closed in. Whereas when you and I were growing up, even now, you know, when you watch the news, you might see something that you hadn't thought of, or you might hear both points of view on something that'll at least make you take a step back and think. And people are not getting it anymore. You know, they're watching either Fox or MSNBC or Newsmax. They're following who they want on social. So they're only seeing what they already know, which is validating that. And they're not seeing anything else.
Now, taking that conversation, shifting it in a different direction, are you helping your clients take their news or their news coverage and merchandise it out over their social to reach those type of audiences? Do you see that our clients finding value in that?
Depends upon the client. Listen, I think probably everybody needs some kind of presence there. It is one of the places when journalists get a pitch. They look at your website and they look at your social. They're validating that you're there. When a journalist writes a story, they want to know that we posted the link and said, thank you, journalists, for writing this story and posted the link on Twitter or on the client's Facebook page. So you're helping amplify their message and getting them clicks. So there is that kind of symbiotic relationship. But in terms of, depends upon the client, in terms of it being marketing, it really would depend upon the client. And certainly B2B has very little applications.
Yeah.
But it's more presence and a placeholder. And again, amplifying what already exists. So if a journalist writes something, amplifying that is helpful.
And speaking of amplifying, you cover a lot of these topics on your own radio show and podcast. Tell us a little bit about that show.
I do. I'm having a blast. It's called Let's Talk PR and More. And each show like yours is a half hour show with one person. So it's either one aspect of public relations. I've done a show on PR for food. I've done a show on PR for live events. I've done crisis communications. Or an industry that it tangentially touches. So I've had a reporter. I had Mike Harrison, who is the head of talkers and the head of talk radio in this country. I've done a show on digital marketers and influencers. So kind of fun. And it airs Mondays at 5 o'clock on WRHU-FM in New York, as well as the live stream then. And then it posts everywhere in your favorite podcast sites as a podcast every week on Mondays as well. And my and you're going to be a guest on my show in a few weeks. We're going to tape. So I'm excited. When Jody's a guest, we'll promote it. So check him out. It'll be a great conversation.
And we will definitely post links to your show in our show notes
This goes
live, for sure. Sherry, this has been a great conversation. Let's segue now into the rapid fire question portion of our podcast. I know you've been looking forward to this.
Thank God I prepared for this part.
All right, good, good. Well, you know how this goes, right? We ask a series of rapid fire questions. These are fun. Want to get to know a little bit about you and maybe get a little laugh out of you as well. With your indulgence, here we go, Sherry. Rapid fire question number one. What is your favorite news source?
You know, I'm going to say CNN. It's always on the background. I always have the TV on in the background, and that's the go-to.
Very good. Rapid fire question number two. What's your favorite social media platform?
Favorite? I don't know if I have a favorite. I'd say the one I really check most often is probably Twitter. It's not as robust as it used to be. I should say X, but it's still a good source of what people are talking about in conversation and some links that I can find things elsewhere.
Yeah, it reminds me of an old AP ticker.
Yeah, it's the old water cooler, right? It's not what it used to be. You know what it's great for? Watching sporting events with it, watching entertainment shows with it. The commentaries while you're watching it are running. Help make it more community experience.
Absolutely right. Rapid fire question number three, coffee or alcohol?
Why do I have to choose?
Right answer. That is the right answer. Rapid fire question number four. What's your favorite on the run food?
Pizza.
Yum. Anything on the pizza?
No, usually just cheese. I'm good. Classic.
Dig it. All right. And rapid fire question number five. What do you want to be after you finish this career?
God, I don't know. Maybe a beach bum, but I don't know that I want to finish. I might want to change it and spend more time on my radio show and more time mentoring, but I think I still for a long time want to have my hands in it. I'm enjoying it.
Sounds about right. Sounds good to me. Sherry, this has been a great conversation. Please let people know how they can find you online.
Thanks, Jody. You can find me at Goldman Communications Group, which is www.goldmanpr.net.
Excellent. We will look you up, Sherry. Thanks again. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Please remember to subscribe to the show. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The PR Podcast and send us a question or a comment. Our intro is by Christopher Apple. You can find him and his fantastic photography on Instagram at Christopher_APPOLDT. Check him out there and hire him for all your photography needs. You can find me online at Jody Fisher on all the socials and on the web at jodyfisherpr.com. We'll see you next time on the PR Podcast.